Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Two-Pad Stack, where we dive deep into all things NHL and then some. If it's the Boston Bruins, we talk about the ups, the downs, and everything in between. But we're not stopping there. We're also tossing in some Patriots pigskin, gaming glory, dad jokes, and all things pop culture. Because why the hell not? It's our show. Whether you're a longtime hockey lunatic like us or just looking for a good time, you're in the right place. This is the Two-Pad Stack. Now your hosts, Ace and Burge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 31 of the Two-Pad Stack podcast, brought to you in partnership with the Hockey Podcast Network and our friends over at SeatGeek. Promo code Two-Pad Stack Pod to save $20 off your first purchase, as well as DraftKings. The crown is yours. I'm your host, Ace. Alongside me is Burge. How's it going, Burge?
Oh, it's going, you know, another week of Bruins hockey. Excited to get in talking to it with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first things first, we got a shout out to Mrs. Burge, the goalie, who was gracious enough to allow Burge to jump on and do a recording with me this evening. She took on the sole responsibility of parent and let Burge skirt away. And I do take full credit for this, by the way. I went behind Burge's back and I DM'd his girl and asked her, hey, you know, Mrs. Burgess, would it be all right if Burge came over to play tomorrow at 7? Like, would you let him go over? It's so funny how things come full circle, right? You know, it's just like we're 10 years old.
I know.
Is it okay if Burge comes over?
And you sending me the gif of W with mission accomplished on the aircraft carrier. That's that's an appropriate gif to use because we all know what happened after that, and that's what's going to happen to me. So,
yeah, you're getting a shoe thrown at your face.
Yeah, I'm going to pay for it later. But yeah, absolutely. Shout out to her. Grateful to be able to get this in tonight. Obviously, we both got pretty tight schedules, so it's nice to get back in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, shout out for my wonderful wife as well. I was like, I'm up there trying to wrap up dinner for the kids, and I'm like, Burge is on a super tight schedule, and he's gonna fucking kill me if I don't get downstairs to start recording. So she's like, it's fine, I'll go. Just go record. I'll take care of it. I was like, I love you. What an awesome lady.
No so kidding. Shout out
to our significant others today. This is gonna be the We Love Our Wives episode.
Absolutely.
What's going on with you, buddy? You got some hockey on the schedule tonight? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I got men's league getting back into it this week. Didn't play last week due to it being at like 10 o'clock at night. Too late, especially when you're going against 22-year-old kids that are just going to dangle around my entire team. It's just not worth it for me to go and get shelled at 10 o'clock at night by a bunch of kids that could skate circles around me. So yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Got my little guy on the ice for the first time last Monday.
Nice.
It didn't go all that great. He was super pumped the whole way, super pumped as I'm tying his skates. He's excited to see the Zamboni the minute we got on the ice. I don't want to do that. I'm like, okay, well, let's. I did. There was one point where they had the, not the milk crates, but they had some, you know, assists for the kids to push around on the ice. They're actually really nice, much nicer than I had when I was a kid. But there was one time where I had his hands on there, I was holding him and I was pushing him around that he was saying, oh, this is awesome. This is awesome. He was laughing, but it was one lap.
It
was one lap. And then the rest of the time, you know, he was just, I tried not to push it because I don't want to be that kind of parent that does that. And then all of a sudden my kid's turned off from playing or skating ever again. I don't want to do that. He's only three. Yeah. So plenty of time. We'll try it again soon.
Yeah. I mean, that was the same reaction I got for my kids the first time they played. You know, Aria, my older daughter, she didn't really come around to ever playing hockey, and that's fine. You know, it is what it is. But Amelia, who also had that same reaction, like she was probably about three or so, was how old she was when I first got her on skates. She saw her older sister saying, I'm not doing this, when she was like seven. Mm-hmm. And Amelia's like, well, she's not doing it. This sucks for me too. Like, I don't want to do it either. So it wasn't until I got her back out there again until she was six that she actually got into it and really, really enjoyed it. So there's still plenty of time, and that you hit the nail on the head. I think if you force it, they're going to make an association of negativity with the ice. And that's not what you want if your kids are ever going to play. So you're definitely on the right track there.
I was the same way when I was skating. My dad remembers telling him a story. I think I was five or six, where he took me to learn to skate for the first time. I hated it. I felt like sick to my stomach in the car. I was telling him my tummy hurts. I was nervous. I didn't want to do it. So I put me out there once. I told him I didn't want to do it. They didn't make me go again. And they tried the next year, and it went. Obviously, the rest is history. I've played hockey the rest of my life since then. So it's all
you
about
still do cry before you play every time, right?
Not cry, but my tummy hurts a little bit before I go out there, you know, because I know I'm going to get peppered with pucks and places there where there's no padding. And I'm like, I'm going to get bruised up again.
Yeah. So there's nothing worse than those giant purple marks on the inside of your thighs when you get hit in the five hole area.
Shoulder.
Yeah.
Right on the top of the shoulder. It makes your arm go dead. I swear I get hit there every game, and it's like a sweet spot. It's just like, come on.
Yeah. I actually just got home from Amelia's first tryouts.
How'd that go?
So, can I just say how fucking stressful it is?
As a parent.
For a guy that's usually on the ice coaching, and I can always give like real-time feedback to my kid, as I do other kids that are on the ice. I'm not one of those coaches that only pays attention to their own kid. Mm-hmm. But when my kid does something, I have the opportunity to be like, between drills, I'd be like, this is what I saw you doing. You know, I would like for you to try doing this. Just gently guide and gently steer towards a different behavior. When I'm up in the stands, I can't do that. All I get is like a cursory glance as she skates by, and I just have to encourage her, you know, give her a thumbs up or, you know, whatever. But I'm like, oh my God, like she's doing a drill. I'm like, two hands on the stick. I'm like saying it to myself, and my stepfather's sitting next to me. He's laughing. And he's like, I was like, come on, do your crossovers. Pivot better than that. Go around the cone. You cheated. You didn't go all the way around the cone. You went over the cone. And
Don't be that dad in the stands that's yelling at their kid.
I know, exactly. That's a fine line. Is like, I don't want to be too vocal, but
I still have vivid memories when I was a kid, and there was this one parent of one kid on my team, and you would just hear him from this, get in there, like just like, put your hand, take the shot, get your stick on the, just screaming top of his lungs. I'm like, my dad never did that. My dad coached a lot, but like even when my dad was in the stands, he was quiet. That you're handling it well.
Yeah, I mean, just that transition from being on the ice and being able to talk to the kids in real time to just having to kind of sit on your hands. And then at the end of it, too, you don't want to be like, good job, but here's all the things that I think you could do better. Because it's like, kid doesn't want to hear that as soon as they got off the ice for skating an hour. Like, Amelia's like, I'm ready to talk about dinner. Like, let's talk about dinner instead of hockey, Dad. But no, it was good. I don't know how they're able to make a firm analysis of it. They had probably about 50 kids out there, and it's one session of an hour.
Only
for the
one
tryout. Only one session.
Wow.
There's three teams, so it'll be interesting to see how they get things sorted out. There was a few kids out there that, despite it being a might tryout, it looked like these kids have played for probably 2-3 years, because the very first shift they get out there in the scrimmage portion, and you've got one kid setting up on the far post with his stick up in the air looking for a one-timer. I was like, holy smokes, like what is going on out here? Like, and Amelia's getting out there and matched up against these kids, and I'm like at what point did she like get matched up against the, you know, children of NHL players? Like, this is wild. But
oh man, that's awesome. It's an awesome time for a parent. I'm looking forward to that moment in, you know, 5 years or so, when my kid hopefully wants to do that at some point, you know. And but yeah, I'm surprised it's only one session. I remember when I was a kid, it was like two or three that you'd go through with basically the same people on the ice, and they would do different things on those days. Maybe it's just ice time is more expensive now, so they're not booking as much, or there's more programs that are taking up the ice. That's my only explanation for it. I'm really surprised about that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the thought is that they already have a pretty good understanding which kids are going to be moving up to the high end team, the ones that have already been playing mites. Mm-hmm. Cause Amelia, it's coming out of intro to hockey,
right?
Which is a range of age of from 4 to 8, right? And they're all going to be Mites players when they're done with intro. So basically, if they had already been playing for a Mites team or they were already on the XL team and they didn't age out, they're probably a shoe-in to return. None of those kids are really going to be regressing. So, I mean, it is what it is. She's like, at the end of the trial, she's like, I really hope I make a team. I was like, you're going to make a team, kid. It's just which team you're going to play. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter which team you make. You know, you'll get out there, meet some new people, make some friends. And every time you play, you're going to get better. And that's what it's all about. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a glimpse into the world of Ace's coaching. I am signed up to return as a coach next year, so we'll see what that schedule looks like. Maybe I'll have to maybe entertain the thought of stopping the whole bartending gig on the weekends if it's too demanding, but yeah, we'll see how it goes. In the world of the Black and Gold, this is the last episode you guys are going to listen to until the trade deadline is coming gone. So figure we'll take some time to kind of dive into some of the latest rumors that we're hearing. A lot of it's going to be follow-ups to the discussion that we already had last week. You know, still a lot of talk about traditional hockey trades, more smoke and fire around the goaltending situation. But I wanted to kind of dive in on that first and foremost and just kind of get what your thoughts are, Burge, on the current, you know, rumors going around about Linus Ullmark.
I'm going to be floored if they actually pull the trigger on a deal involving Ullmark. Obviously, he's got, I think it's a 15 team, no trade or no movement clause there. So eliminates more or less half the league from where, you know, potential suitors could come from for him. There are a lot of teams that do need goaltending. I just think that the market, the return on investment for that is not going to be there for the Bruins, given how their team is currently constructed. Now, this is going to sound like it may be like me calling for Ullmark to be traded or sent out of town like yesterday, but I think the Bruins are in a position now, given how they've played, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but they need to start testing one of these guys, because neither of them have been, you know, the same goalie they were last year. You know, you're not getting that same elite level. I mean, they're still two of the better goalies in the league. Don't get me wrong. It's not me bashing them, but they haven't been stealing games like they did last year, you know, previous, you know, efforts. And that's a little concerning to me, especially considering how the team has played in front of them. You kind of are expecting them that they need to step up and maybe steal a game or two, but it's time to start testing the endurance of one of these guys. And my choice right now would be Swayman by far. I mean, he's been the better of the two. Let's see what he can do shouldering a little bit more of a workload. They're going to need it come the playoffs. I know we've talked about this like at nauseam at the beginning of the season, but they're going to need to do it. And I think now's the time to do it while you still have Linus Ullmark there in case it doesn't work. I don't think that they should trade him, and I don't believe that they will, but you never know.
Yeah, and I do think that the reason why there's so much smoke right now is that we've already talked about in the previous episode, they need to do a hockey trade. It needs to be money in, money out. Mm-hmm. And the goaltending situation, it's become abundantly clear to the point that Burge has made that Linus Ullmark is not the guy that's getting them the better results on ice right now. That performance in New York that we just came off of, not Linus Ullmark's brightest night. And he hasn't had any of those nights really like he did last year. Like your point is perfectly illustrated. You think back to that Calgary game on the road right after we got Dmitry Orlov at the trade deadline, where the Bruins were outshot what felt like a 10-1 margin in the perfect season. And last year, the Bruins had the wheels knocked off of them. They were just getting taken behind the tool shed by the Calgary Flames. And what does Linus Ullmark do? He absolutely steals that game. And I just haven't seen that degree of competitiveness and expertise from Linus Ullmark this year. He's been okay. He's been good, but he hasn't been the Linus Ullmark that we had last year. And I think as a result of that, Jeremy Swayman's the same guy we saw last year, in my opinion, this year. He's playing at a very high level, very competitive, elite goaltending level. and Linus is just being good. And right now, that means that Linus Allmark is taking a backseat to Jeremy Swayman. And his cap hit is four or five times. It's like two times higher than Jeremy Swayman's right now. Barely. It's less than that. But you get my point.
Yeah.
Linus Allmark is a $5 million backup goalie right now. And a lot of other NHL teams out there still really covet what Linus Allmark can do. Obviously, the Bruins do too. But we're in a position of, you know, a wealth of expertise in the goaltending position. And, you know, maybe that's a place that the Bruins do look to subtract at in order to add value in other places. We've already said many times that we don't think it's going to happen in the regular season. I still don't think it's going to happen at the trade deadline. But, I mean, you ought to also acknowledge the fact that these insiders that are talking about it a lot, you know how they make their money? They make their money by getting clicks. And when you tell a Boston Bruins fan base that your goalie that won the Vezina last year could be traded, you're going to get clicks. So we'll keep an eye on it. But
Swayman hasn't even been the same guy. I know you said that, but he to me, at the beginning of the season, he was that guy, if not better. But as the team has dipped, so has he. He hasn't been, you know, the same guy that he was, you know, 2 months ago either. So he's kind of going through it a little bit too. He's definitely been the better of the two, like we've said. But let me ask you this. If they trade Allmark out now, let's just say it happens, who's your backup? What are you going to do if Swayman
Michael
gets hurt?
Michael DiPietro is my backup.
What if Swayman gets hurt?
Then we go Michael DiPietro. And but, I mean, you can't just that because you've got a fucking guy in Jordan Binnington who came out of nowhere and won a cup.
Sure, absolutely. That can always happen. But wouldn't you rather have a known commodity that's – been there?
Honestly, I'd rather not acquire a washed up old goalie just because
I don't want to acquire anybody either.
So what are you suggesting then?
I'm suggesting they don't trade any. They don't trade either of them.
In my opinion, I think it's a good time this offseason to trade Linus Allmark.
Offseason, absolutely. Yeah. That's a completely different thing.
Right now, unless New Jersey, who is in a situation where they're actively looking for a goalie, unless they come and say, hey, we'll trade you our 2025 first round pick plus a defenseman of your choosing, which I'm not pulling that out of my ass. I saw a bunch of Devils fans talking about that when they were speculating based off of this Linus Allmark rumor that I think Pierre LeBrun was putting out that the Devils would be interested in Linus Allmark. Devils fans are more than happy to offer a first round pick plus a D-man off of their roster for Linus Allmark. And at this point, the Bruins want to address the bottom pair. Grab one of those D-men, grab that first-round pick, use that first-round pick to pull in a guy like Noah Hanifin, and you've just addressed two places that you were looking to do. I don't know. It makes sense, but if I'm going to trade Linus Allmark, long story short, if I'm trading him at the deadline, it's going to be somebody that's going to offer a compelling package, and otherwise it's not going to move the needle. We're not selling him because we just feel the need to.
See that kind of package from New Jersey, I don't think that would do it for me. I still don't think that would be enough right now for me to pull the trigger. Jeremy Swayman has not proven that he can shoulder the load in the net. He split time his entire career. And if they do trade Linus Allmark out and they don't bring in another like veteran goaltender, that's going to be the expectation.
I don't want another veteran goaltender. There's no point of bringing in a veteran goaltender.
But you're going to expect a guy who's never done it to do it and play at the same level while doing it. I'd rather test that theory now while you still have Linus Allmark on your team. Because if Jeremy Swayman does it and it doesn't work, you still have a fallback of the guy who won the Vezina last year. No matter how he's been playing this year, he's still been good. I'd rather that option.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a first-round pick and a top-end defensive prospect for Brandon Bussey.
No, you can't do that
for Linus Allmark.
But Brandon Bussey's not ready.
When are you ever going to know he's going to be ready until you get rid of one of these fucking goalies and give him a chance?
Next year.
Yeah, next exactly. Year. We're in agreement on that.
Not in the middle of a run where you're, I mean, you know, given Grant, how they've played in the last month aside, they're still sitting atop, you know, in the top of their division and in the league for that matter. So it's a tough point. He's just not the guy in the place where I would go to move money out to fill the need. That's just where I sit. I'm still not there with wanting to move out a goalie.
So to follow up on that thought, there's rumors that Jeremy Swayman is on the cusp of signing a pretty large extension. Now there's nothing that's super reputable, but a lot of people have been talking about it online of a potential 8-year contract extension for Jeremy Swayman, in the range of $7 million or so. I don't see how the Boston Bruins can in good faith offer that as an extension unless they have a deal maybe lined up for Linus Ullmark, because you're not going to have $13 million locked into two goaltenders. You can't. That's not the way to run an NHL franchise budgetary wise. So if you're going to commit to Jeremy Swayman for that term, for that money, Linus isn't coming back next year, just straight up. That's just how it's going to work.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that. But at the same time, you're offering a guy that kind of contract, hasn't even played half the games in a season. I think, well, he did it once. He did it once, and that was in 21-22. He played 41 games. But aside from that, he only started 39 of them. So you're going to expect this guy to come in and be your number one, and you're going to pay him 8 years now. You're locked in 8 years. And I'm not trying to bash Swayman here. I'm trying to emphasize my point that before you put pen to paper with something like that, see how he does playing back-to-back in 3 games in 4 nights or whatever, 3 games in a row, 4 games in a row. See how he does and see if there's any drop-off and see if he can sustain it before you commit big money long-term like that to him. That's where I sit.
But, I mean, I understand that the Bruins don't want to go through the whole RFA, you know, arbitration process again. Jeremy Swayman doesn't want to go through that, but you can't make that offer to him in that range without contingency plans for Linus Ullmark. And there's another wrinkle to this too, and this has also been well documented online. Brandon Bussey, who deserves a crack at an NHL team, he's not going to be somebody they can just arbitrarily send up and down starting next year. He's waivers eligible. So the Bruins would risk losing him for nothing if they don't move on from one of these two goaltenders. And is that something that they can in good faith do? Yeah, sure, if they still want to keep this tandem going. But is it the shrewd asset management move? I don't think it is. I think you move while you still have a high level of value that you can get in return for Linus Ullmark, and you promote Brandon Bussey from within, and you see what you have next year, whether it's DiPietro or Bussey. I know I said DiPietro earlier. I was saying hypothetically this year, based on stats, DiPietro has been a better goaltender than Brandon Bussey, but the waiver situation is something you need to keep in mind for next year.
Absolutely. So if you're under your head right now, if you were told you had to move or keep him for the rest of the season, are you in the camp that you want to see Ullmark traded? You want to see it happen? Or would you rather he be here unless, again,
it is entirely determined by the compensation in return. That is the entire thing. This year, as shitty as it would be, we've talked about it all year. This is a transition season for the Boston Bruins. Now, I think it would send the wrong message to the room if we ended up trading Linus Ullmark for 2 first-round picks and didn't use those assets to bring in another player that would really address some areas of need for this team. If you just kept those draft picks as draft capital, that would say, hey, great work on the first half of this year, guys, but we don't really give a fuck what you're doing. We're planning for the future. And I do think it's important for the Bruins to keep an eye on the future, but you don't want to tell Brad Marchand, yeah, we really don't want to give you anything to help you. You know, unless a team comes knocking, like I said, unless the New Jersey Devils comes up and offer a package that will just knock your socks off, I would rather just keep this tandem in place until the end of the season and then make that change in the offseason around the draft.
Okay, that's fair. I would personally rather, if let's say that example that you just brought up with the Devils and you're talking getting a first round pick and a defenseman of your choosing, let's say that offer's on the table. Let's just say it's there.
Friend of the show gets the Bruins on the board.
Let's Morgan go. Geeky,
let's fucking go.
Let's go. Let's go.
All right. Anyway, sorry.
I was going to say, if your offer with the Devils was an actual thing and it was on Don Sweeney's table to make a decision on, you consider it, but I'm not flipping that first round pick. If you're getting a defenseman to help the team, there's your hockey trade, a goalie for a defenseman. And you're going to bank that first round pick and you're going to hold on to it. That would be the only way I would be happy and okay with something like that. I don't really want them to invest in this team at all this year, if I'm being straight honest with you. Like, given how the last month and a half has gone and the trends that we've seen, they need a lot of help, in my opinion, to make a serious deep run. And I'd rather have a first round pick.
Yeah, I get it. We'll definitely see how things shake out. For the Bruins, for their activity this Friday, I can see them doing a hockey trade. We'll see Jake DeBrusk probably shipped out. Maybe not. Who knows? Maybe they end up keeping Jake as an own rental. I think that would be poor asset management, and I think this front office is too smart to do that. I imagine Matt Grzelcyk will be gone, probably for like a fourth round pick, just to shed some cap space and move out a roster slot for another defenseman, preferably one with some size and some grit. That's not completely incapable like Derek Forbert. Yeah, happy birthday, Forbes. So I would like that a lot. I would like that a lot if they could do that. I think that they'll probably acquire a bottom six forward. I know we've talked about it a bit. I would love to see a guy like Pat Maroon on the fourth line. Bring Fat Pat in. Guy has a winning pedigree. And I don't know. I think it would be hilarious watching Jack Edwards try to call Patrick Maroon scoring a goal in the black and gold after what he did.
That'd be some entertaining TV right there. That happened. I do kind of agree with you. I don't need them investing in any heavy forwards for this. The defense has been an absolute mess for the last month when the whole slide started, and you know we've talked about it. But I don't want them using any real true future pieces to help this team out right now. I think they played very well in the first half of the year. I still hold out a little bit of hope that they can kind of regain some of that mojo after this adversity that they've gone through. I mean, we're going to see what their kind of response is as we go down the stretch here for the last month and a half of the regular season. But yeah, adding a sizable defenseman and via hockey trade, DeBrusque for a defenseman, sign me up. I'm all in on that. And if you got to attach a mid to late round pick to make something like that happen, fine. Yeah. Those pieces, yeah. I'm okay with moving. I'm not moving first round picks. I'm not moving second round picks. I'm not moving guys like Fabian Lysell, anything like that. I'm not doing it. That's just, I think, putting again too many chips on the table for this season and risking what's coming down the road after.
Yeah, I agree. What was that Islanders game?
Yeah. Did they even board the plane?
I don't know. I didn't even see them out there. It looked like Amelia against those kids that were playing like for 3 years compared to her. It was wild. Like Kyle Palmieri had a natural hat trick in the first period. I swear to God, that guy scores every time he plays the Boston Bruins.
He's a Bruin killer. He's been that way for years.
Reminds me of Thomas Vanek. Do you remember how Vanek would always do that as well?
Mm-hmm. Thomas Vanek.
Unbelievable.
Yep. But it's usually those types of losses are losses for a team that can be like a wake up call when you just get absolutely pantsed the way that they did. But I don't really have any faith that it's a wake up call because it's been again, it's more the same stuff that we've seen out of this team for this last month. I mean, this was probably a little bit worse than what we've seen. And to be honest with you, I'll take an ass kicking like that over blowing a lead late in the third period and losing it overtime.
Yeah, that's
true. I would take that in a heartbeat because at least you know it's over. It's like, okay.
What's that quote from Justin Williams when he was playing against the Boston Bruins in the postseason with the Canes? He's like, sometimes you just got to eat the poop sandwich.
Yeah.
You don't like the taste, but you got to chew it and you got to swallow it.
Yeah.
And you're going to remember that taste of that poop sandwich the next time you play them. And hopefully the Bruins got their regular season poop sandwich with that loss to the Islanders.
For me,
that quote just lives with me, man. Something about a poop sandwich.
But it's true. It's such a true statement when you're talking about playing sports. Like, yeah, you got your teeth knocked out. Pick up your teeth, put them back in. Let's go. Go out there and give it back to them. So, again, I just... I struggle right now as of today to see that a loss like that will actually do something to kind of change this team's ways at the way that they played over the last month, because we've had such a pattern of them blowing leads and losing in bad fashion. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the building for the game against the Vegas Golden Knights, and my brother and I are hanging out, and the Bruins come racing out to a 3-0 lead. And we're like, holy shit, let's go. This is the offense that they've been missing. And sure as shit, immediately as the second period starts, bang, bang, Vegas scores twice. I'm like, here we fucking go again. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And they just cannot seem, you know, let's rewind 10 years, right? What were the Boston Bruins known for?
Tightening up defensively.
Yeah. They were and a shutting down defensive yeah. system. We never had, like, David Pastrnak was not an elite scorer. The Bruins didn't have an elite scorer for the longest time. It was rare for a Bruin to get more than 30 goals. I remember when Patrice Bergeron hit 30 goals, I was like, wow, we have a 30 goal scorer. I'm so used to hearing about, you know, other teams having 50, 60 goal scorers. Bruins never had one.
They'd always have like 10, 20 goal scorers or something like that.
Exactly.
Like it was spread out. Yeah,
exactly. And the Bruins would fight their way tooth and nail for a 3-1 win, 2-1 win, 2-0 win. You know, we didn't have these high scoring games, and I would have faith in those teams, you know, whether it was Claude Julien's systems or whatever, those teams would close out those games. I shudder when they have a multiple goal lead going into the third period, because it's almost like they expect that they can replicate that style of muffling defense, and they get off of the gas pedal entirely, and they just let the game come to them, and they're not good enough defensively, even with the two goalies that we have, to just sit on a lead and expect to come out with 2 points. And they just keep doing it for some reason. The big players, our big players, our leaders are not leading in the third period, and it's very frustrating for me.
Absolutely. And it's kind of ironic. I missed the first period of that game. That was prime time, chaos time at my household for that, the Burge household. So I sat down. It was right after the second intermission. I'm sitting down. I'm like, all right, we got a 3-0 lead. I'm going to turn it on this game. I shouldn't have even turned it on, because the second I turned it on, you know, 5 minutes later, it's 3-2. I'm like, oh, great. Here we go. Like you said. And I don't know. And you touch on the leadership aspect of it. How much of it do you want to put on the coaching staff? Like, the coaching staff can't get away scot-free for something like this, because obviously the Bruins are definitely playing to a system that the coaching staff wants them to play. They're playing a way of style of hockey that the coaching staff wants them to play. I think Jim Montgomery is a fantastic head coach, and the crap that he got in the offseason last year, that he should have been fired for the way that he managed that series, was an absolute joke. But we've had a pattern now for a month where they're clearly not, actually, we'll say it's the whole season. It's really been the whole season where they've had difficulty closing out leads late in the third period. One goal, two goal leads late in the third period. They've blown a bunch of them. Something that they're doing, they're not, it seems like maybe they're a little too focused on offense. Maybe the wrong guys are on the ice. I think that happened in the third period, like a power play with Pastrnak in the Vegas game where he's out there taking a shot, shoots it right in the guy's chin pads. Chandler Stephenson goes down the ice, and that's an easy goal on a breakaway shorthanded. Like that stuff can't happen. So I think, I don't want to let the coaching staff off scot-free here, because they Bruins are obviously playing to a system that these guys want them to play, and it has not worked late in games for good portion, if not the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, and I saw somebody else on Twitter, and I really thought that this was compelling. Like, how many times am I going to hear Jim Montgomery come out and say, we were trying to get to our identity? We need to work on our identity. Jim Montgomery, my Lord in Christ, we're almost at the trade deadline and we don't know what our identity is. What the fuck is the Bruins' identity? Who are the Bruins this year? Are they who we thought they were at the beginning of the offseason? Are they a team that can't score goals that has to tooth and nail claw their way to a win? Are they a team that puts up two goals in the first period against the Toronto Maple Leafs like the Bruins just did? Pavel Zacha put the Bruins on the board for 2-0 lead on the power play. Who are the Boston Bruins? Like, I am getting whiplash. They can't figure out who they are.
Yeah, you're spot on with that. I mean, going into the season, we thought they were going to be a stout defensive team. You know, they're not. No. They're clawing. They're not clawing their way to win. They're scoring goals better than I think anybody thought they were going to. But they're not locking things down in their own net, in their own end, and in front of their own net. Like, it's just not happening.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. Let's go ahead and send it over to our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook for a quick message, and we'll be right back.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. You could even get the Boston Bruins, for example, at plus 170 against the Seattle Kraken. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to Pad Stack fans. And welcome back to the Two Pad Stack Hat Trick with Patrick. I am Patrick. Let's go. Shout out, as always, to DraftKings. That's where I get all my odds. Where I am 10-17 on the season, going 0-3 last week. We're looking to turn that around. Always gamble responsibly and at your own risk. But that being said, let's make some money. First, I have the Arizona Coyotes -1.5 against Chicago. That's -1.5. The Coyotes are playing a bad team here. They're both bad teams, but we're looking for the Coyotes to cover against a team that has given up the cover a lot this season. Next, we have the Boston Bruins money line. Yes, that is the Boston Bruins to beat the Edmonton Oilers. That's in Boston. And that is what we are taking, plus 100. The Coyotes are plus 114. And then the Devils, Panthers over 6.5. Yes, it's the Panthers, one of the better teams in the East, and the Devils, who are still one of the better teams at covering the over-under. And we're going with the over 6.5. That's minus 125. So yet again, that is Coyotes -1.5 against Chicago. Bruins money line and Devils Panthers over 6.5. This has been the Two Pad Stack Hat Trick with Patrick. Thank you. Shout out to all the Two Pad Stack fans. I am Patrick.
All right, let's we're go. Back. So yeah, there's I don't know what's going on with the coaching. Do I blame the leadership on ice? I think that I probably do for a lot of it. I think Brad Marchand could play a lot better for a lot of the times here. But we also have to recognize that just because he has a C on his chest, he's still Brad Marchand. It's not like he's a completely different player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I think, even outpacing his normal production from last year when he was with Patrice Bergeron. So I don't want to put too much pressure on the guy. I don't want to expect him to be the second coming of Christ here. But when you're the leader of the team, I expect you to make better choices. He's still doing some of those, not the bonehead plays that he would do to get himself in the spotlight for suspension stuff, but some poor decisions like ill-timed line changes that put the mm-hmm. Bruins in a pickle. Like, I still have PTSD from the 2019 Game 7 line change.
Too.
Like, and it just seems like sometimes Brad just, he's gassed and he just goes to the bench because he wants to get off the ice and he doesn't necessarily have that hockey sense to really know. Even if you're gassed, you really can't do that. And that's kind of reared its head in a few situations, making one too many passes when the Bruins net is empty and it ends up going into our empty net. And between him and Pasta, the overpassing and turnovers in the offensive zone, I get very frustrated because it feels like sometimes those two are trying to do too much out there.
That's been a common thing with this team. As far as I can remember, when they're playing on the, even on the power play or in the 6-on-5 or 6-on-4 situation, it's just like, take the damn shot, take a shot. Like, you guys are able to, you know, have high quality scoring chances off your shots. Just take it and hope for a rebound, like get the greasy goal. It doesn't have to be pretty every time, but you're spot on with that because Pastrnak and Marchand are notorious. It's been that way. We go back since Pastrnak really kind of turned into Pastrnak, and that, you know, Bergeron, Krejci was notorious for it too. When he was here, he would always make that extra pass when he didn't need to. And they're not talented enough of a team to be able to do that. Like, they don't have the same skill set, which is why everybody at the beginning of the year was like, they're going to transition. They don't have enough. They're going to win games 2-1. It's because of that. And now maybe they were feeling themselves a little bit with how the year started off and how they've been scoring, because they have been scoring better than anybody thought they were. Let's make some changes. That's a subtle change that could be made. Picking a goalie is a subtle change that could be made. I mean, let's not discount the injury to Hampus Lindholm defensively. Yep,
that's a good point.
Like, I mean, they're seeing, like, I was never his biggest fan when he was, you know, out there. I was always kind of like, he's kind of a jag, just a guy out there. But we're seeing it. We're seeing what happens when a guy of, you know, is one of your top defensemen is out, and you're having to play guys like Shattenkirk and Forbert and on a regular basis.
And I actually saw an article recently from Finnish media where they were interviewing Mikko Rantanen. So obviously not a guy that sees the Bruins on a regular basis, right? Mikko mm-hmm. Rantanen plays the Boston Bruins maybe twice a year. I mean, unless they meet up in the Cup final, that's mm-hmm. the only time that they're going to play. And the Finnish media asked Mikko Rantanen, who are the toughest defensemen to play against? And you know what his answer was? The Boston pair of Charlie McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm. And you hit the nail on the head there with Hampus Lindholm, Burge. You know, last year at the beginning of the year, everyone was like, holy shit, Hampus Lindholm, because he was having to be that number one D-man. And he had all of the favorable, not the favorable matchups, but he was like really on that pedestal and on display. You know, the utilization that the Boston Bruins have with Hampus Lindholm is to have him out there against, you know, some of the top offensive threats. And they tell him, don't take as many risks. Don't try to go for those high-end plays. Just do your job. And when you're a defenseman, we've talked about this before. When you're a defenseman, if you're just a jag, if you're just another guy, that's not a bad thing.
Right.
If I'm not noticing you, that means you're doing your job. It means you didn't throw a muffin up into the slot for the opposition to have a breakaway on your goaltender. It means you didn't lose an edge in the corner and let the forecheck walk in on backdoor, backhand, whatever. If I'm not noticing you, you're doing your job. I mean, I would love to see Hampus Lindholm do those crazy pinch plays where he creates a beautiful primary assist. Sure, yeah. But, you know, when you have one of the top wingers if the game come out and say that you are one of the premier defensemen, when your peers that are competing against you are talking, you know, positively about you, that means you're doing something right. And it doesn't matter what, you know, Joe Schmo from the North End or Southie thinks about Hampus Lindholm. You know, if Mikko Rantanen is saying you're one of the best defensemen in the league, you're one of the best fucking defensemen in the league.
Mikko Rantanen is one of the best wingers, like you said, top wingers in the league. And the fact that he's saying that, I actually didn't hear that. So that's wild for me to hear. And it goes right in line. And the evidence is on the ice now with how this team has played over the last month that they miss a guy like him in there. And
yeah. And he's a part of that leadership core that we were talking yeah. about. Hampus Lindholm is a part of that leadership core. He's been pulled aside alongside Marchand, McAvoy, Coyle, all these guys. Lindholm is, I mean, he's under contract for a while with us still. Like, mm-hmm. he's part of this core, and he does play a big role on that blue line, and his absence right now is definitely noticed. I wanted to talk to you about, have you watched the most recent Behind the Bee?
No, I haven't.
So it was the one that was all celebrating Marchand's 1,000th game.
I saw a couple of clips from it.
Yeah. Did you see the Chris Kelly clip?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I fucking love Kelly.
He was my favorite, one of my favorite Bruins during that, you know, when he was on the team. He always like was that underrated guy that I was like, dude, I love this dude. He's
100%
great player.
Did we get him from the Senators at a trade deadline deal?
Yeah, the year they won the cup.
Yeah, yeah. What a fucking legend. Chris Kelly's a hilarious dude. Like, he's just got that dry humor where he's just gonna rib you the entire time, and then as soon as he says something and you know it's fucking hilarious, he won't sit there and laugh. He's gonna skate away. He's going to be away from you, and you're just going to be like, what the fuck did he just say to me? Yeah, he was like, in the interview, if you haven't listened to it, it's really hilarious. He's just a little clip that he recorded for Brad Marchand's 1,000th game. He's like, oh, my God, I cannot believe the league is so washed up that you've played 1,000 games. Like, it's so diluted now that you're one of the top tier players. Like, you make me feel like I could go out there and play at a high level still, Brad.
Congrats again. Have a nice day. Skates off.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Mark,
yeah, that was definitely a great clip. That had me rolling on the ground. I was laughing so hard.
So good. So good. There's a member of that coaching staff that needs to be held more responsible, that Chris Kelly guy.
Yeah, absolutely. You should be held as responsible as the guy you just chirped.
Yep. Yep. Look at this shit. We still got to talk for another 15 minutes. What do you want to talk about, Birch?
I don't know.
Men's league
hockey?
I don't have much to talk about on that subject. I'm trying to avoid that shit like the plague. I threw my hat again at the Vegas game.
I wanted to ask, did it actually make the ice from where you were?
No, God, no.
I didn't think so.
No, I had like 5 beers that night. It went straight up, hit the roof, and then went down. And then it hit somebody in the head, and they threw it further down for me. So I think it made it down there eventually. But yeah, I'm still a little upset. It was like a Mitchell and Ness $45 hat. My brother's like, why would you throw your hat?
Don't like, drink and go to hockey games, folks. You may lose your hat that you love.
I was like, Jeff, it's friend of the show. Yeah. His first career hat trick. And I was there to see it. I was like, I didn't care if it was like a hat made of gold. That thing's gone. So
I'll be straight honest with you. When I was watching that and I saw it go in and I saw the replay, I was like, ooh, these people are throwing their hats. I don't know if he got a piece of that. I don't know.
Jeff was like, I got ready to throw it. He's like, wait. It might have been pasta. He's like, don't throw it yet. And then the replay went on and you could see everyone realizing it. Like, okay, yeah, he definitely got a piece of that. And everybody's throwing it.
The first replay they showed on TV, it looked like it went off off hill. Into the net. It looked like it hit, like he went up to like catch it, and it looked like it like deflected off of his glove. And then they showed the back angle on it, and it was like, okay, maybe he got a piece of it. And then they, you know, throwing their hats and stuff. I'm like, this is going to be something if they're doing this whole thing and he's taking a hat, and they announce a scoring change like halfway through the period that he didn't get the goal. Everybody's not going to have any hats to throw if he has to net an empty netter to get the hat trick at that point.
Yeah.
Good for him. Good for him. That was awesome to see.
It was great to see, and it would. I'm more happy the fact that they actually closed it out in regulation. They tried so hard to lose that game. They really did. They tried to throw it away, but Jeremy
thank God
Swayman,
for Swayman. Thank God for Swayman at the end. That last minute, dude, he came up with a couple of big stops.
Yeah,
big stops.
Apparently, Leafs fans were chanting, "We want Boston," in front of their arena tonight.
That doesn't surprise me. That doesn't surprise me, dude. The Leafs fans are, I don't even,
they're the same ones that wanted Florida last year too.
I don't,
they
even
got Florida.
That fan base, dude, I love their misery. I love drinking their tears when they get their hopes up and they just fall flat on their faces like they always do. I was so mad they won a series last year. So mad.
Yeah, dude, you know, honestly, what was the worst for me? I don't even care about Leafs fans anymore. They don't even bug me. Like, I just, you guys are irrelevant. Your team hasn't done anything in 95 years. You have to go back and grab the, like, old grainy black and white footage from the last time your team won a cup. Yeah, like, they barely had cameras back then.
I saw it. You know, we're talking about the Leafs. Did you see the Coyotes tweet out? I don't know. Maybe it was last week about having as many.
I heard about this tweet.
More playoff series wins in the last 20 years or something. It was something to do with the Leafs, and it was bashing the Leafs. I'm going to go ahead and talk. I'm going to see if I can find it, because
I heard about this tweet, but by the time I was going to be able to see it, they took it down, apparently.
I don't know if they took it down. It was there.
I think, like, DJ Bean or something was talking about it. But they're like tweet of the year, and you guys deleted it.
I didn't know they deleted it.
Yeah. Another stat for you to chew on while you're looking that up. Sportsnet stats tweeted out today. NHL Bruins Brad Marchand leads the NHL with 38 drawn penalties. You don't think the Canadian media is going to run with that and accuse him of being a diver, do you?
They might.
I think Pasta goes down pretty easy a lot.
Here it is. Here's a tweet. Friendly reminder that the Arizona Coyotes have three times as many playoff series wins as the Maple Leafs in the last 20 years.
That's fucking hilarious.
The Arizona Coyotes. Team that plays in a 5,000-seat arena. Doesn't even have a home. You're kind of spot on when you talk about the Leafs, because I mean, their stupidity, I just love to laugh at it and to troll them. Like, in my simulation hockey league, we have about probably, I don't know, three or four of them in there, you know, to go along with the rest of the, you know, the French Canadian Habs fans. And it's so fun to just chirp them, because the Habs are the Habs right now. They stink. And then you have the Leafs, who consistently find ways to lose in hilarious fashion, and it's gotten to the point where it's not even like fun anymore to chirp them, because unless it's the Bruins playing them, there's no real fun. I mean, it's just fun to see them freak out, and nothing will top it for me was the 2013 comeback in game 7, when you had the cam, and I'm sure you've seen the video of the Leafs fans watching the game, and they had a dash cam, and they're all getting all amped up, and then all of a sudden you just see them at the end, and there's one dude sitting in the corner, he's just staring at the TV after Bergeron scored that goal. I was like, that probably would be me. I would just sit there and just, I'd have to take it. I'd just have to take the licks. I wouldn't be able to look away from it.
Yeah.
I'd just have to look at it and just sit
there. I gotta shout out your boy, though, because I just recently rewatched the highlights from that game that you're talking about. And just how close it was. I mean, they went within two goals of the lead with like a minute and a half left. That's when they scored the 4-3 goal. They only had 90 seconds to draw even in that third period. And Bergeron pulled it off with like 45 seconds to go. And then Peverly, I think, had a chance to put it away in regulation with a rebound.
Yeah.
And he misses it. But the boys were buzzing. And then overtime started. And the Leafs came out. I think Lupul had the one timer, far post, and Tuukka went full splits and got his pad on it.
Yep.
To keep it alive. And then he stopped the backhander from Lupul on the other end. And like, holy shit, man. Like,
that overtime was pretty back and forth. It was pretty back and forth.
How different it would have been if that one-timer went in. Then I'd have even more of a reason to call Tuukka a playoff choker. But he definitely kept them in it for that absolute clutch game. And the only reason I was looking at those highlights today is because shout out Boosie for that highlight clip that he posted. And also shout out Boosie for joining the Dad Club, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
little boy. Welcome to the world, little Mr. Abusa there. So big time shout out for you there, buddy. Super happy. Glad mom and baby are doing well. Glad to hear you're doing well too. And yeah, if you guys get a chance, if you haven't listened, check out the Only Bruins podcast. Boosie's the host over there. It's where I got my start with podcasting as a guest over there. Great guys. Brett Howard is a pretty good NHL player. Still owes me for my Xbox. I don't think I'm ever getting that money back. But yeah, check out their pod. But yeah, it's it was good to kind of just look back at that quick little clip and reminisce a little bit about the good times. And every time I see number 37 on the ice and in highlights, it kind of brings me down a notch a little bit.
Just like seeing number 40 for me brings me down a little bit.
I got brought down enough times whenever that guy was in the crease.
Ah, here we go. I could rewatch that clip.
And honestly, Bersh, I hope I die before Tuukka Rask so he can be my pallbearer and let me down one last time.
No comment. No comment. That's a cheap shot. That's a cheap shot right there. That's a cheap shot.
Oh, brother. So Bruins end of the first period, 2-0 lead against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Pucker up.
Reports say that Jeremy Swayman's playing like he's got that dog in him. Playing like he's got that dog in him. And I got to speaking of Swayman, I'm going to go on a tangent here. I fucking love what Jeremy Swayman is doing in the crease this year. He's being a little dramatic, and I love that theatric shit. And I know that you don't really like it as much, but I've talked about it before when he was like staring down the Habs goalie. What are you going to do? He's, you know, when somebody sprays him, he's standing up, getting in their face. He's barking at his defenseman when they play like shit. He's commending his defensemen when they do a good job. Like, I think, yeah, on this most recent Behind the Bee that I already alluded to, Parker Wotherspoon was mic'd up. And Wotherspoon boxed the shit out of his opposition, gave Jeremy Swayman a completely clear view, no screen, and he made the easy save. And some goalies would just make the save and grab a water and whatever. No, Swayman gave him a pat on the ass, and he's like, good job, buddy. And I really kind of see Jeremy Swayman becoming a little bit more of a vocal leader on this team right now. And I really like that, especially if things are going down the path that everybody's saying that they are, with Jeremy Swayman being locked up long-term as the number one goalie here in Boston.
I think as the goalie, you need to have that presence out there. If you're going to be effective, you're the one that sees the entire ice when you're playing. And if he's out there and he's doing that kind of stuff, it shows that his teammates are respecting him and he's giving it back and that he respects all of his teammates. I don't care for the dramatics like with the Habs. That was a little bit over the top for me.
I love it.
All right, dude. Like, you're challenging the other goalie down the other end of the ice. Like, okay, it wasn't even any real chaos going on at that point. Like, if there's chaos going on, fine. I'm all in for it. But if there's nothing going on, like, okay. Like,
I don't know, man.
Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes a little bit.
If the goalie on the other side of the ice was getting involved in a little bit of a scrum with my forwards, I would skate to the blue line. I would say, don't fuck with, if you want to fuck with anybody, fuck with me. Goalie versus goalie. That goalie on the other side didn't do that. They're a bunch of bitches.
That wasn't even a real scrum, though.
Anytime, Jeremy Swayman was involved, he was face washing people that were in his face. And if I, as the opposition goalie, if I saw you doing that, I would fucking come challenge you. Straight up.
In a real situation, absolutely. As soon as he crosses that red line, he's going to get a penalty for it. So, like, that's, you got to pick and choose, like, your opportunity. Like, if that was actually going to escalate to a full-on Donnybrook and you were going to have a line brawl out there, absolutely. And if he didn't, shame on him. But that one wasn't, if I recall this scrum correctly, that was not the case. That was not going to happen.
I don't know, man. I just signed my next renewal for my game plan seats. So I just signed myself up to spend a lot of money. I want a goalie that's going to fucking entertain me. I want Jeremy Swayman in my crease. Like, I want him to stare down the opposition goalie and get him to skate down and fight him. I want to see a goalie fight. Like, just that entertainment factor. I adore it. And I'm super excited to see that potentially continuing. And it goes back to, I mean, you even saw a little bit out of it, out of Linus Ullmark in the postseason.
That was warranted. That was warranted in the postseason. That was warranted. He went at him.
Yeah. But I love it. I love it. I want more of it. I like it. I love it.
You need a team that's going to instigate that kind of stuff, though, right? You're going to need a team that's going to be tough like that, that's going to play like that. The Bruins aren't built like that.
No, they're not. And I think that's why you got to get a guy like Pat Maroon.
He'll go crazy. Yeah. Get that grip back in there.
He'll start some shit. Oh, yeah. I do think that Jeremy Swayman would fare pretty well in a scrum with other goalies. Like, if you had to pick a goalie that would fare well in a little tilt against Jeremy Swayman, who would you pick?
Vasilevskiy.
He's got the reach. I could
see. He's a crazy Russian.
But I mean, Alexander Semin's a crazy Russian, and he didn't know how to throw a punch. He went bongo drums on that fight. Different. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. That was Alexander Semin, though. Come on. Vasilevskiy wouldn't be some dude I'd want to mess around with. Jordan Binnington, that'd be a fun one to see him go at Binnington. That'd be a good one.
Oh, Binnington would get his ass kicked.
That would be entertaining. I'd sign me up for that. You want to instigate him, fine. But I mean, the way the goalies are built these days, like they're not like that. It's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up here. This has been a pretty productive conversation here. Burge has to run off to hockey. Jared's going to come hang out with me and try some beers, and we're going to watch some the rest of the Boston Bruins game. Those of you that are tuning in, I really hope you enjoy the trade deadline coming up. I hope the Bruins have some good moves in store, and hopefully we'll have some more stuff to break down and analyze for next week. But until then, thank you for tuning in. Thank you again to our sponsors, SeatGeek, promo code 2PADSTACKPOD, DraftKings, promo code THPN, and the Hockey Podcast Network. We will talk to you all next week. Peace.
You've been listening to the 2-Pad Stack. Our passion is hockey. From Beer League to the Bruins, we friggin' love it. We love the Patriots, too. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We know we had a blast. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Twitter and TikTok at 2PADSTACKPOD. And find the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching 2PADSTACK. See you next time on the 2PADSTACK.
This concludes our broadcast day. Click.